you ever heard of digital currencies like Bitcoin, Ethereum, and buzzwords like blockchain, cryptocurrencies, and mining? Don't know what it all means or how to get started? Well, at Let's Talk Crypto, we break it all down in easy-to-understand terms and help you learn and earn in the age of cryptocurrencies. So welcome to the Let's Talk Crypto Show, brought to you by SchoolofCrypto.com with your hosts, Barry Moore and Tom Galeski.
Welcome back to another episode of Let's Talk Crypto. I'm one of your hosts, Barry Moore, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Tom Galeski. How are you, brother?
Very good, Barry. Very good, buddy. Excellent.
In today's episode, we'll be discussing methods of keeping your crypto safe. It seems like you can't go a week without hearing some story about somebody getting hacked. So this one's all about safety, how to keep your wallets, how to keep your coins safe. We're going to talk about what are some of the common pitfalls along with solutions, why you must pay attention to security, and how you can keep it safe on this episode of Let's Talk Crypto. Why don't we debunk a few myths about security first, Tom? So what's one that you've heard quite a lot?
Yeah, this is one that I come across the other day with a really good example. So the first thing is, because Bitcoin and this whole cryptocurrency stuff is all digital, the perception out there is that it's so easy to hack. The protocol itself has never been hacked. We've seen that. And the biggest weakness actually lies with the people, as in us, in handling the technology and all these online exchanges. So a really cool example that I heard the other day was, if I were to give you a grain of sand and you put that into your pocket, went for a swim in the beach or the ocean, whatever, and the sand fell out, and you came back, and then I asked you to find that same grain of sand, you have a better probability of finding that sand than you do of actually hacking into the Bitcoin algorithm. So that should give you some perspective how secure this cryptography actually is.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you hear about all these hacks, but it's not the currency. It's not Bitcoin that's being hacked. It's an exchange or it's a person in particular or whatever. So I guess the real world analogy would be, you know, if you've got a bunch of money in the bank and the bank gets robbed, that's not a fault or a weakness in the dollar bills that you have in there. That's a weakness in the bank. They didn't have adequate security to keep your money safe. So it's the same thing with an exchange. It's not the currency that's being hacked. It's the businesses around the currency being hacked. Like we heard NiceHash recently being hacked for, I don't even remember how many, but it was an eye-watering amount in the millions and millions and tens of millions of dollars. But today we're going to talk about how you can keep your money safe. So the thing about Bitcoin, you know, it's all peer-to-peer and it's all, you know, money for the people. That means there's no safety net. There's no backup. You have to look after your own money. So you need to take steps to keep it safe. So no one's going to do it for you like a bank. So let's go through a few of the different areas to be aware of when it comes to securing your crypto. So first of all, let's start with private keys. Tom, what can you tell us about private keys?
Yeah, this is the most important thing. I think we've mentioned it in every episode and we probably will to do so, is that private keys are literally, it's like the PIN number on your ATM card. It's like the PIN number to a safe at home. It is crucial to protecting your funds. So your private key is something that is attached to your wallet. When we've talked about wallets before, never give your private key to anyone. Full stop. They have the private key, they can have access to your wallet, which means they can then have access to your funds. And that's something that we obviously want to avoid. So common practice for us at the moment, as we talk about, is you can buy a crypto and use hot storage in a cloud or an exchange. But ideally, for large amounts and for long-term play or long-term investment strategy, a hardware wallet is always king in those situations. Second thing is, we talked about the private key. Make sure you write them down, store them in a safe place. And also to add to that, have a contingency plan. My wife was sitting in my little home office the other day and she said to me, I've got no idea what's going on with all this crypto stuff. You've got stuff everywhere. And she goes, if something were to happen to you, she goes, I would have no idea how to get access to any of that. And she's 100% right. So outside of the hardware wallets and keeping your private keys safe, have some sort of contingency plan, maybe even a little step-by-step process to help in the recovery should something happen to the
keeper of the keys.
Right. So because you are your own bank, there's no phone number to call. There's no email password reset. None of that exists in this digital world that we're experiencing at the moment. So yeah, I'd also suggest have some sort of contingency plan that if something were to happen to you, you're not the keeper of all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and one other thing to clarify, when we talk about private keys, you know, they can be that long string of characters that you may have seen, very similar looking to your public key. But a lot of wallet vendors now are moving away from you knowing that big long cryptographic key and just having a seed phrase that can recreate that key for you should you lose your key. So in previous episodes, we talked about a 12-word seed phrase or a 24-word seed phrase, like the ledger has a 24-word seed phrase. For example, if I lose my ledger, it's got all my private keys on it, I can buy another ledger, put that seed phrase back in, and reconstruct the private keys, and I'll have access back to that crypto again. So you can think of seed phrases and private keys as kind of interchangeable. You can write them both down. You can store them somewhere. If you got a good brain, you could memorize them. Those two things can almost be interchangeable when we talk about private keys.
Yeah, excellent point, Barry. And it's something we'll keep hampering on, but it's so critical. You know, I was talking to my nephew the other day and he said, "Oh, dude, I bought 10 Bitcoin ages ago. It cost me like $30. And he's got no idea where they went, what the password was, what the private keys were. And on today's value, that's the best part of 200 grand in Australian currency. So he's not too upset because he doesn't remember what happened to them. But, you know, it's $200,000 really for a $30 investment many, many years ago. So, yeah, have a contingency, write them down, keep them in a safe place. That's all we can offer.
All right. So now that we got our private keys safe, we've got some steps to take there. Next thing we want to think of is avoiding theft, right? So we talked a little bit about it earlier that it's kind of really the exchanges that have the weakness and not necessarily the currency itself. And all you have to do is type in Google exchange hacked and you get a bunch of articles about different exchanges that have been hacked over time. So, you know, the exchange is a really attractive looking target for a hacker because there are thousands, if not millions, of customers on these exchanges. A lot of people will leave their crypto on the exchange. So it's a nice honeypot for them to go after rather than your individual wallet per se. So first of all, realize that the exchange is the point of weakness or the online business is the point of weakness. And don't leave your coins there or don't leave any you can't afford to lose. Like, so you might leave a, you know, a few $1,000 if you want to do some day trading or whatever. But if you've got a substantial investment on there, don't leave it on the exchange. Just take it off, as we said, into a hardware wallet or to a software wallet or paper wallet, whatever. Just don't leave them on the exchange. Secondly, those passwords that you use to get on the exchange, if you're like us, you're probably on a half a dozen different exchanges, checking them out, see what they're like and checking out their fees and stuff. So I think I've lost count of how many different accounts I have on different exchanges, but you want to make sure that the passwords aren't the same across all those exchanges. And you want to make sure that they're strong passwords as well. And a lot of exchanges will actually make you put in a strong password if they're serious. So minimum 8 characters, try to use symbols, uppercase, lowercase. One way to do it is just to use a mnemonic phrase or a nursery rhyme or something like that, and you just take the first letter of each word and then change the case to uppercase, lowercase, and throw in a few numbers somewhere to mix it up. But certainly make sure that there are strong passwords on each exchange and they're different on each exchange, because if someone were to hack your password on one exchange and find it, I guarantee the first thing I would do is go try all the other popular exchanges with that same account information and see if I can get into those other ones as well. So don't be lazy. Lazy people get their money stolen. And then last, you might want to consider a password manager, things like LastPass or Tom will probably know some other ones as well that can generate and keep track of those passwords for you. But then again, realize that having all your passwords in one place, if someone hacks into that password manager, Tom, anything to add on that?
Yeah. So I use a password manager because as part of the password manager software, it's got a password generator. So it does like a random generator. You can say, I want it to be 15 characters long, press go, and it can add symbols and characters and uppercase and lowercase. Now, it doesn't make a lot of sense, like it's jumbled up characters, but that's generally the best way to protect your account from a brute force attack or anything like that. Now, just to loop back to, you know, Bitcoin thefts, in the intro, Barry mentioned NiceHash. Now, NiceHash is an internet or a cloud-based mining interface. So what happens is I have got my mining rig downstairs, which has hash power for doing all the mining. What NiceHash offers me is the ability to sell my mining power to someone that wants to buy mining power. So what happens is I've got hash power. It goes into their pool of available resources. People buy my processing power, which is great. Then I get paid in Bitcoin. Now, one of the things with NiceHash specifically was they incentivize you by keeping your earnings on their online wallet. They lower their fees. So guess what I did? I did exactly that. Now, NiceHash got hacked last week. At this stage, the speculation is they've run away with around $70 million worth of Bitcoin. And I followed all my rules, all the stuff that we've talked about in all these episodes, and I had no money in that wallet because I had a default. When it hits this limit, I'll pay the fee, pull that out into my other wallet, which I use my software wallet in my home, and that worked really, really well for me. So that's just a classic example that these guys got in and ran away with $70 million. Just like that. And so I just click my fingers. I don't know if you heard that through the audio. So we've got to be really careful with this sort of stuff, guys, and we'll keep hampering on it. But this is one of the biggest weaknesses. Now, another example, which will probably lead into the next thing, Barry, is we talked a lot about with these exchanges. When you log in to enable the 2FA or the two-factor authentication, we had a huge round of accounts being hacked in the last couple of weeks. Now, a lot of these guys were big YouTubers that were talking about all their systems and their processes and how much money they're making and wow, wow, waving their hands in the air. And they thought they were doing the right thing. They had their software wallets. They had the two-factor authentication. So this is where when you go to log in, it sends you an SMS to your phone or use the Google Authenticator app, which generates a random number every 30 seconds. So what the hackers did was they got their phone numbers. They basically rang the carriers of their phones, got their phone numbers moved to another SIM card. They got a phone, inserted the SIM card into that, logged into their account, said, yeah, password reset. The reset went to the phone that the hackers had. They logged in with their account, and guess what they did? They transferred all the Bitcoin and currency out. One of the guys specifically, just shy of $1 million worth of Bitcoin. Now, that was a few weeks ago now. It's well over a million, but they took 111 Bitcoins out of his software wallet. Now, his mistake was he used Gmail. Nothing wrong with Gmail, but he had all of his private keys stored in his Gmail. Once they got access to that, they had access to his documents, they had access to all of his private keys, and then they just did a simple password reset, got the code sent to the mobile phone that they then controlled, and have a nice day.
Yeah, I heard one guy too, it might be the same guy, that had his 2FA stuff was going, well, his phone was going through Google Voice. That was his phone number. So when he would get a 2FA thing, it would go to Google Voice. So someone just hacked his email account and then, you know, did a password reset and sent the 2FA thing via a Google Voice message to his inbox. The guy who got into his inbox also got into his 2FA just because it was in the same place. It was the same thing. So the whole idea behind two-factor authentication is you get two separate points of attack or two separate points of weakness or strength, depending on how you want to look at it. So two-factor authentication is something you have and something you know. So if you think about your bank card, if someone steals your bank card, they can't empty your account at the ATM because they've got the card, which is something I have, but they don't have the PIN, which is something I know. So the two-factor authentication is, you know, someone gets your username and password, that's something you know. Now they need to get the SMS code or the 2FA code, that's something you have, which is your phone. So you can get an SMS to you, as Tom said, just send an SMS to your phone. Or there's another little app called Google Authenticator that you can put onto your phone so that it's not actually sending it to your phone number, it's sending it to the app, which is tied to your account and tied to your Exchange account. And then it will just send you the code as if it were an SMS. So you don't necessarily get it via your phone number in that particular case.
That's a great point, Barry. And we've seen that that particular, we call it a hack, but that particular process was used on 5 or 6 of the higher sort of more public people out there that are into this crypto world. And they all got done the same way over a 48-hour period. So by the time they got their YouTube channels back, because all of everything got shut down because they had passwords to everything, it was too late. So they I think whoever was responsible for it did really, really well for a few days worth of work. I'm sure there was planning and stuff that goes into it, but ideally we've got to be so careful.
Yeah, it's a good time to be a hacker. And that also highlights another security point. Don't brag about how much crypto you have.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, and that brings us to the next point. So let's say in an ideal world, you've got a wallet, or your access to the exchange, you've got your two-factor authentication set up and you're feeling safe that you can actually call your provider and let them know that the passwords and SIMs and things like that cannot be reset unless you come into a retail store or there's a special key phrase or something that they'd have to ask you that you have to answer before they can make any changes to your account. So let's say in an ideal world, you've got everything set up. You followed our version of our advice. Now, obviously, you can do your own research, but you followed the way that we do things. But now you're feeling really good about yourself. Bitcoin's up 26% today. And you thought, you know what? Let's just go out to the local coffee shop and have a coffee to celebrate. And what do? You connect to the free Wi-Fi and you log into your apps or to your accounts and you start checking your crypto or you start checking your wallets or you start checking the exchanges. So this is another point of vulnerability. Free access points, free Wi-Fi can also be monitored and the traffic can be potentially tracked, monitored through hackers, and obviously you're sending your passwords across there, they can obviously get access to this sort of stuff. So accessing your wallets or the method of accessing your wallets, it's really, really, really important. Ideally, use your home network where possible. If not, in a trusted network, whether it's an office or somewhere that you already know or already have some faith or some security around it, don't use free public Wi-Fi networks. And if you're going to do that, maybe consider using a VPN for the added layer of security. So you can still use the free Wi-Fi, but you're connecting via a VPN, which encrypts all your traffic, and that allows you then to access exchanges or wallets or whatever you want to be doing at that stage.
So Tom, maybe you might want to just expound on what a VPN is?
Yeah, great point, Barry. So sorry to get too technical, but VPN stands for Virtual Private Network. So essentially what that is, it allows me to connect to another server that I pay money to. There are free ones out there, but the paid services are best. That basically means that the connection between me and that server is secure and it forms like a little tunnel. Now, as that tunnel, all my traffic goes through that tunnel, so no one can see what's inside that between me and my VPN provider because it's encrypted. Once I then go out to the internet, everything, once I go outside the VPN, it's no different to me using my home network. The difference now is, we go to the next point, is make sure that the website you're using is secure. So we've seen this a lot, and we'll get through this as we go through the a few more points we want to talk about on today's episode. But just because you've got a secure network, you using a VPN for added layer of security, it doesn't mean that the website you're accessing is also secure as well. So we talk about looking for the HTTPS or looking for that little green secure symbol in your browser. That shows that the traffic and that website is encrypted with an SSL certificate. That generally means it is legitimate. And that's what we want to look for. So all we can do is put as much protective layers in as we can. And if you can sort of use this little stack or this little security stack that we're going through today, that'll give you the best chance of not getting caught up in some of these things that we're seeing at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. And which brings us on to the next point, which is what everybody's seeing at the moment. And the thing that gets people the most is not that they've had the security hacked, is that they've just been tricked, and that we're talking about phishing scams, and that's phishing with a PH. These can take a lot of different forms, but one of the most common ones is a fake email pretending to be from an exchange you might have an account with. It says, oh, your password's been reset. Click over here to log in. They basically send you a link and pretend to be Coinbase or pretend to be, you know, CoinJar, whoever your exchange account is. And then you click on that and there's a little password box. You put your name and your password in, but you're not putting it into the exchange. You're putting it into a copy that they've made on their own server. So they're gathering, you're voluntarily putting in your name and password into their little database for them to collect. So that gets a lot of people. So we're going to spend a little time here on phishing scams and how you can avoid them.
Yeah, Barry, one example actually I saw the other day was an example of an actual email that looked like it came from Coinbase. We've heard of Coinbase. It's pretty much, I don't know if they're the largest, but they are huge. They have literally millions and millions of customers, and they're signing up well over 100,000 new people per day. Now, the email came from support@coinbase.com, but the coin was C-O, the number one, or I think it might have been the letter L, NBASE.com. So on the glimpse, it looked like Coinbase, but the I was almost like an uppercase I. So that's another domain name that they control. The average person would look at that. The logos were the same. It looked very, very legit. They clicked on it to verify their account. They put in their details. The site looks the same, and all they've just done, if you've just given them your username and your password for Coinbase. Now, if you didn't have two-factor authentication enabled on that account, they would go straight in and do whatever. Now, what I'm seeing, the exchanges now are forcing people to turn on 2FA because they can see these type of phishing scams out there. As we progress further with more people coming into this crypto market, we're seeing that unfortunately they're getting caught up with these phishing scams. So we're going to put it out there. Probably a great opportunity to mention our private Facebook group where we can put these alerts and put some screenshots up there to keep you guys in the loop of things that we're seeing. We're getting a lot of inquiries, stuff coming across our desk with the Facebook pages. So go to Facebook, look up School of Crypto, and we'll get you into that group straight away. And that way we can keep you up to date because, like I said, we talked about in the last episode, we're recording these, but it might be a week or maybe even two before they go live. And so much changes in this world at the moment. Now, it's really cool, really exciting, but there's this type of scary stuff as well. And we'd love to be able to connect with you guys as the listeners and, you know, keep you up to date with what we're seeing, and hopefully prevention is always better than cure in my book. So hopefully we can help you guys out moving forward.
Yeah. And so some steps you can take to protect yourself against these phishing scams is, so say you did get an email from Coinbase. Rather than clicking on the link in the email, you could just go to your browser, open your browser, type in coinbase.com and log in there. If it was a genuine alert, it should be sitting there under your account details or whatever. So don't follow the links in the emails. Either one, type the address in yourself, or two, go to that exchange or go to that business. Make sure you're in the proper one. Make sure the HTTPS is there, as Tom has said. Make sure the certificate matches who they say they are. Then take a bookmark of that so that you have your own bookmarks. So you're either going back to it from your own list of bookmarks or back to it by typing it in directly rather than following links that you might get in emails. And then the other thing that kind of goes hand in hand with this is what some scammers are also doing is taking out online ads. through online ad networks. So instead of seeing an email, you might see, and you might be on a website like, you know, some Bitcoin related website, and you see an ad and you click on it and you think you're going to the genuine business, but you're not. You're going to one of these fake phony phishing sites as well. So it's not just emails, it can be online ads as well. So again, don't click on any online ads, just type in the address yourself.
Beautiful segue to the next point, Barry. We've mentioned this before about Ponzi schemes. Now, this is a perfect place where they show ads on showing how much money you can make with crypto. And you click on the ad, it's a legit website, it looks great, it promises the world, you put in your money, and they shut down. Okay, now, we talked about this before, Barry, and I have to admit, I have fallen for these, like a few other people I know have, and I have lost money with this. This is traditional Ponzi scheme that we've, I suppose, that's existed for a long time in the traditional world. The scammers pick this up and put it into the digital world, and we're seeing them more and more. I'm seeing them pop up in my Facebook feeds. I'm seeing them pop up in ads, just like you mentioned then before. So when they're promising something it's too good to be true, for the most part, it absolutely is, as in it's not true. Don't do it.
Yeah. The more people that are out there making money with crypto, the more people that are out there trying to steal it from you. So I always think, you know, just trust no one, suspect everything, and you can't go far wrong.
So Barry, I just wanted to maybe give a little bit of an example around what I've seen these Ponzi schemes, what they look like. Generally, there's some type of an investment program where you have to put in some money. Now, when I say money, they don't want US dollars or Australian dollars. They want cryptocurrency. So generally it'll be Bitcoin, it'll be Litecoin, it'll be Ethereum. And the theory is that you deposit some of that currency into the system, into your account on the system, and it's locked away for a period of time. Could be 6 weeks, could be 6 months, could be 12 months. It doesn't matter, depending on the scheme, quote marks. I'm putting quote marks in the air right now. Now, the whole idea of it is you make that investment of the cryptocurrency, and what they'll do is they'll pay you back at 1.5%, 2%, 3%, 5% per day. I've seen different systems out there. And people go, that's too good to be true. And guess what? It is. The way that I got caught was I put in a little bit of money to try the system, and it was paying me back every day. And I thought, this is going really, really well. Then I drew some of the money out and I got it into my wallet. I'm going, wow, this is so cool. I've got to do this again. So what I did, I reinvested. And then one day, the page could not be displayed and they were gone. All the chats, all the support, and all the other mechanisms around it were literally shut down overnight, and they ran away with a ton of money. Now, going back through some of the other Facebook channels and the other forums online, there's people that are up in arms about it, as you can appreciate, and they've involved authorities. Like, so we're going to the FBI and we're doing this, but what are they going to do? We're talking about an anonymous cryptocurrency that essentially these guys, girls, these teams of people are probably smarter than average Joe Blow, and once this crypto gets done, it's done. So this is a classic example. So as we come across these little scams or schemes, we'll post this stuff in our Facebook groups to try and keep you guys up to date, just to warn off the signs. If you see these ads, maybe even put a screenshot down and throw them into the group, and we can give you our feedback. Now, again, we're just normal people. We're not investors. We're not, you know, trained to do this stuff. There are no real community experts of cryptocurrency. It's such a new world. Barry and I are here just to share our opinions with you guys and maybe point out some of the mistakes, especially me. I'm a little bit more Wild Wild West style strategy, so I've fallen for a few of these things. I'm pretty emotional when it comes to investing. I want to make money fast, as most of us may or want, but it's not a very good strategy in this world. And unfortunately, I've fallen for a few of these schemes. So again, if you see these little things, just be careful. You can do your research if you like. You can do investigations if you like. You can make the final decision. And, you know, the mantra of this whole crypto world is do not invest any money you are not prepared to lose. And it does sting. It really does.
And remember, this isn't like credit cards. When you make a crypto transaction, it is irreversible. So it is gone forever. So make sure you send it to the right person, and make sure, like we said, it's going to the right website. But even if it is going to the right person, make sure that you're using the right address. Because even if you just, oops, I sent it to the wrong address, there's no pulling it back. You just sent a bunch of money to the wrong address. And I did that once. I sent $50 to the wrong address, gone, just gone forever. So some little rules to follow there is, you know, scan a QR code if you can. That's probably the easiest way to avoid making a mistake. Don't type out the addresses, probably copy and paste them. But also remember, when you copy and paste, that it's quite easy to truncate or cut off a character at each end of the string if you're copying and pasting. So what I always do is I always paste it in. Then I check the first four or five characters and the last four or five characters to make sure that I've got the entire string there before I hit send.
Yeah, Barry, great point. I do exactly the same as what you do. Just check the first few characters, check the last few characters before you press submit, and hopefully avoid sending currency to the wrong person. So I think we'll wrap it up there, Barry. Just as a quick summary, these are some of the points and some of the mantras that we use. So trust no one, suspect everything, keep your private keys safe. This is critical. Where possible, use a hardware wallet. Please use strong passwords and make sure you enable two-factor authentication where possible. Try to avoid using public Wi-Fi if you can, but if you have to for whatever reason, try and use a VPN. Look out for these phishing emails and websites and these scams that are just rampant all over the internet at the moment. Avoid fraud through these Bitcoin scams. And just remember, your Bitcoin transactions are irreversible, so make sure you get it right.
Yeah, great advice, Sarah. And if you want a copy of this security worksheet, you can head over to theschoolofcrypto.com/show. Check out the show notes. You can download our little security worksheet there. So that brings this episode to an end. If you have any questions, head over to schoolofcrypto.com and feel free to leave us a comment there. In the meantime, we'd love it if you could subscribe and share the show. It helps us get a wider reach and more people can find it and get involved with Bitcoin and digital currency. Also, if you want to get the latest scam alerts and what's going on in the world of crypto, easiest way to do that is to head over to Facebook, search for School of Crypto, and join the School of Crypto Facebook group, and we'll keep you up to date every single day. So thanks again, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Yeah, thanks, Barry. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Let's Talk Crypto podcast. You can find the links, show notes, and all the latest cryptocurrency news over at schoolofcrypto.com.